Yes, today I am joined by BITIS Conference Associate.
Stu, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thanks. Thanks very much for having me, John.
Well, that's a lot going on right now. Like I said, man, thank you.
Me today is kind of crazy out here right now. Have a lot going on.
Yeah, it's very, very uncertain times, but, you know, I'm hopeful that it's also a significant time of change, you know, in our country, in our mindset, as it relates to, you know, black people in general and just human relations.
Yeah, as we all know, Black Lives Matter is trending again, this time over the latest incident with George Floyd. It's crazy right now. I think there is change in the air right now. I can like feel it. I think if the pressure is continuously applied, like it's being applied, I think some major changes might happen this time.
Yeah, you could be right. And, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, the way that potential change is being, you know, pushed and motivated because,
right.
You know, we're in this day and age of social media, digital media, and in a world where everyone has access to a lot of information, a lot of video.
Right.
And that in and of itself, I think, has built momentum behind change. But, you know, the real work that's still to be done is going to have to be outside of the electronic medium. And
right.
That's going to be in people's hearts and minds. But I agree with you. I do think and sense that we're in a period where we could get significant movement in terms of how we look at each other and treat each other.
Yeah, and the most important thing people have to do is get out and vote, because that's where the change happens, and that's where people's voices are the loudest. You have to let the government know that you want changes in offices, and I believe it'll happen this time.
Yeah, no, you are exactly right. And, you know, one of the worlds that I work in, which is college athletics now,
right.
You know, that demographic from people 18 to 40, percentage-wise, has the lowest voting percentage of any demographic in the United States.
Right.
And it's going to be really incumbent upon young people, Gen Xers, you know, millennials, to get to the polls to weigh in on, you know, with their vote to start to bring about significant change, because it's not only the national elections, but it's the, you know, state and local elections, which
right.
really are the genesis of true change in policy in this country.
Yeah, it's very important. Also, we've seen athletes from all different sports stepping up and talking on what's going on right now in America. What's your take on the importance of everyone in power from NCAA, or from the NBA? We've seen NBA players, coaches, Greg Popovich has stepped up. Michael Jordan stepped up. We have NBA players leading marches, being in protests. Because NBA and NCAA is a big platform, and they have a lot of reach. And they reach a lot of African-American players, people all over the country.
Yeah, no, you bring up a good point, and it makes me, you know, personally proud to be a part of, you know, this giant basketball family
right.
and this giant athletic family, to see, you know, athletes and coaches and administrators to step up in a very big way in terms of calling for change, voicing their displeasure, and, you know, exemplifying the frustration that many of us feel. But at the end of the day, it really is not, you know, celebratory, you know, celebrities
right.
in athletics or entertainment that are really going to bring about change. And it's going to take each and every one of us at every level of, you know, the social economic spectrum, if we truly are going to get to a point where we are formulating policy at the state and local level and, you know, speaking to our congressmen, writing our senators, and letting them know what it is we the people want.
Yeah, it's very important for everyone to have the platform and use it. I know I personally am using my platform I've built to provide some information, voice my mind and everything to my followers and future followers. it's very important everyone has a platform and do step up and let their opinion be known.
Yeah, without question. And, you know, now, as we talked about before, John, there's so many avenues with which you can, you know, let your opinion be known, whether it's writing an op-ed, whether it's doing a podcast like we're doing right now, whether it's going on social media, whether it's writing your congressman and senator. I mean, all of you have all these different avenues to voice your opinion and help bring about change in policy. And as you said, I mean, that is the only way, ultimately, that we are going to change. It's through legislation and through policy, which sometimes can be painstaking. It can take a long time, but that's the way that, you know, change has to evolve.
Yes, like I said, I believe it's about to change. The Big East Conference, how's your position at the Big East Association as Big East Associate Commissioner? How's your own experience with that? How do you like it?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, I've been here about 5.5 years and, you know, have been in charge of basketball, but probably as important to me, I've really had an opportunity to weigh in on the strategic direction of this new Big East, which was reformed, you know, a little over 6 years ago, and also to have a hand in, you know, actually being able to put together programming as it relates to, you know, our student athletes, which doesn't stop and probably is more, as important now as it is at any of the time that I've been here, because we have an opportunity to help educate, engage, and lead student athletes, you know, on these issues today. And, you know, some of my efforts certainly will go in that direction.
Yeah, that's good, because we all know kids come into college and they grow into men, and every experience they get in college helps shape them. Besides coaches, any guidance they get in school, it helps build their future.
Yeah, without question. And, you know, these young student athletes between the ages of 17 and 21 are at some very formidable years in their own development into, you know, full-fledged adults.
Right.
And it really is empowering. It can be very rewarding to see these students come in at a young age, and when they leave, you know, 3-4 years later, to see the type of people that they've become. It's just a rewarding experience. And here, yet again, this is a huge educational opportunity for all of them as it relates to, you know, helping cure systemic racism and social injustice.
Yeah, if I had the pleasure of covering some of the Big East, I cover Villanova basketball. I mean, I love covering Villanova. The Big East is a monster, 10 teams deep. What do you think separates the Big East from other conferences? I mean, we know about the coaches, the teams, from Jay Wright, who's doing a phenomenal job at Villanova, that Patrick Ewing that's come over. I mean, it's Georgetown is a beast now. We had St. John's was a problem last year. Well, I remember the great run Butler did. The Big East stays on top of the headline.
Yeah, you know, Jonathan, for fear of sounding biased, I'll offer you my balanced opinion, though, and my observation. What to me really separates the Big East truly is, you know, the grit that's at the, you know, the foundation of this league. And what I mean is, if you look at, you know, our schools, we're based in large, you know, metropolitan areas, urban areas. Our players play the game with a different style than I think most of the country does. We're a very skilled league. We're not a league of, you know, sometimes not great size, except, you know, a team like Seton Hall last year had great size. But by and large, we're a perimeter skilled league, a tough league, a gritty league, and, you know, one that just, you know, that is blessed with some kids that just compete their tails off, and I think that's what really separates us.
Yeah, because they keep Big East as like a breeding ground for the NBA. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's good to see.
Definitely. Yeah. What were your thoughts when the initial decision came down to cancel the NCAA tournament? I mean, we all saw it building up when the coronavirus started hitting all the main sports agencies. I mean, sports platforms. So what were your thoughts on the main decision?
You know, I thought it was the right decision, and but it was a very chaotic decision-making process for both the NCAA and the Big East. If, you know, you take you back to those, you know, that week before, you know, the Big East tournament actually started in the second week of March. And I thought when Rudy Gobert from the Utah Jazz tested positive for coronavirus, the dominoes at that point on really began to fall. And, you know, a shout out and kudos to Adam Silver for having the vision to, you know, act quickly in terms of doing the right thing, which in retrospect, no question was the right thing to do in canceling the NBA season. And then, you know, we grappled with, you know, what we would do with our tournament. And, you know, even before Rudy Gobert, and our hope was is that somehow we could fit the Big East tournament here in New York at Madison Square Garden in before we had to make that critical decision. But then when Rudy Gobert happened on March the 11th, I believe, we were really left with no choice, and neither was the NCAA.
Yeah, because I got credentialed to cover the on-base swimming again this year, and I got an email saying it was canceled. I kind of figured it was coming, but like you said, they did what was best for everyone in mind. Yeah. It was a good decision that they did. What do you think about the new transfer rules and how it would affect the NCAA? Because now some kids can transfer and they're immediately available to play. So that might make some players, without getting playing time, immediately transfer to try and get playing time at a different team. Also, can stack rosters. We can have like a like Duke. It's not in Big East, but you know, like they can have a monster squad like a.
Yeah, no, it's a point of huge concern, and you know the rule has not been voted on finally.
Right.
The prospect is it'll be voted in January and actually go into effect during the 21-22
season.
But all signs are pointing to that's exactly what will happen. And John, when that does, you know, for lack of a better term, it's going to introduce free agency into college basketball.
Right.
You know, and, you know, the rule itself is very student-athlete friendly. There's plenty of justification why, you know, a student-athlete should be able to transfer right away. But the result of it, and maybe in some cases unintended result, will be that, you know, the number of transfer applications will rise even further in what already is a highly transfer-oriented, you know, men's college basketball setting. So, you know, I know our coaches in the league are you know, not supportive of the rule, but have adopted a stance that, okay, how do we deal with it the best we can in the best interest of student-athletes and in the best interest of trying to run a program?
Your time as executive vice president of the NBA, can you speak on that? I mean, some of your duties included like of on-court operations, like how would that translate into today's game? Because today's game is like faster. There's a lot of players that can play multi-positions.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, and during my time there, it's interesting. I came back to the NBA for the second time back in the year 2000. And very early on during my tenure there, you may recall we actually changed the rules significantly in the NBA to disallow highly physical play. We also revised the interpretation that referees had in terms of how they refereed the game in an effort to reduce physicality. And then we took away the all old illegal defense guidelines.
Right.
And that really set the stage, you know, along with another rules interpretation in 2004, that set the stage for the way that the game was played today. And several things happened. You know, one is it became more difficult to defend players on the perimeter.
Right.
You know, one-on-one. It also, by eliminating the illegal defensive guidelines, it opened up the floor and let the game breathe. And it incentivized, you know, players, particularly perimeter players, to get to the rim more where they got open shots or they, you know, drew defenses to pass out for more open perimeter shots. And it started to really fundamentally change not only the way the game was played, but the way that NBA teams selected personnel. And so the days were gone by where you had the big enforcer and the brute force and the brawn, and it was replaced by skill. And when that began to transition through most of the decade, and analytics came into the game, you have the NBA game that you have today, and it's a beautiful game.
Yes, it is. The one player that's thriving in today's game is James Harden. A lot of people, give him flack because he gets the line so much, but his game is one of a kind. He's continuously making up moves, evolving his game. He's actually one of the best players in the league, but he doesn't get that much recognition because of LeBron James.
Yeah, no, it's true. And my observation also in this, in the NBA, and I've been a part of it in a variety of different roles for, over 25 years, is that all that matters is two things. Do you have game, and do you win championships? And that championship so far has eluded James Harden. I suspect at some point he will be a champion and get the just due recognition that he deserves.
This might be a good year for him to do that because we all know we're going to Disneyland and there's going to be no home court advantage. When they talk about pumping and crowd noise, but we know it's not the same as a home court advantage, which are natural fans. So this is a 0-0, like really 0-0, because everyone is like on an uneven playing field. There's no advantages.
No, it's a fair point. And it's going to, as you're alluding to, going to change the dynamic of the playoffs this year. It's going to be something for us as fans that we've never experienced before. But what I do know, we won't be any less interested. I'm dying
for
basketball. But
definitely.
How it plays out and home court advantage, to your point, remains to be seen, and it may change the outcome and dynamic of the eventual champion.
Do you think there should be an asterisk on this year's champion? I don't think so. Everyone is, like I said, 0-0, and no one has an advantage. Everyone started playing basketball at the same time. When we had the Denver Nuggets and Denver Nuggets played the last game before the hiatus, but everyone quit playing basketball at the same time, and we all been without basketball for 2.5 months. So I don't think there should be an asterisk. I don't.
No, I don't either. I mean, listen, Jonathan, yes, we've missed some time, some calendar time here. But, they're going to play another 8 games. Teams had already played upwards to, 65, 66 games already. So, yes, the regular season is going to fall several games short, but not significant as when we had the lockout when there was only a 50-game season. And then it's going to be followed by, almost 2.5 months of playoff basketball.
Right.
So, aside from the actual calendar days lost, and missing, falling short of a few days of the season, I don't see this having an asterisk, on this season at all.
Yeah, I really don't either. Like I said, everyone is 0-0, and shit, you got to go for it, though.
Yeah.
What do you think about the play-in tournament? I kind of like it. It gives those teams that was basically on the outside of the playoffs a chance.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, and, sometimes we have short memories, right, John? But Adam Silver actually floated this idea about a year, maybe to a year and a half ago, when they were talking about playing a mid-season tournament. That was one idea.
Yeah,
they were talking about shortening the season a few games. And the third piece was to have this play-in for the eighth spot in the playoffs. So, in this sort of COVID-shortened season, it's an opportunity to experiment with an idea, a previous idea, to see if it generates fan interest. But what we do know, it's going to generate potentially 2 extra games in the Eastern Conference and 2 extra games in the Western Conference, which from an owner's perspective, increases revenue. The television networks, it gives them potentially some additional games.
Right.
So, it makes financial sense. And it may make some entertainment sense. We'll see.
Yeah. I said previously that they were trying to get the Pelicans in because of Zion, because he's going to draw more attention to the league. But I don't think he's even needed. Like you said earlier, we've been out basketball so long. We're going to watch it regardless, without Zion or not. But
yeah, no question.
But he's dead. play. He's definitely going to be a plus.
Yeah. So if Zion gets knocked out, you know, of the play-in, you know, I'm still going to be watching the playoffs.
Definitely. Tell us a little bit about the time at Turner Sports, some of the relationships you built there. I had the pleasure of going to TNT Studios in Atlanta. It was it's a family environment there. You can just tell by walking onto the campus. It's just like a welcoming feeling. You get just walking in there.
Yeah, there's no question.
You know what I'm talking about.
Well, I think that's a product, you know, that family atmosphere at Turner is a product of a number of things. One is, you know, there's some very highly talented people, both on set, off set.
Right.
The executives of Turner are some of the best and brightest. But you're right. It's very much of a family atmosphere. It's very welcoming and engaging. And most of all, they have a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So it's a great place to work. There's nothing sort of mundane about it or methodical about it. And,
right.
The NBA provides all the content. And because of that, you know, day to day, you just never know what's going to happen in a game or an issue off the court. And so
right.
It's very dynamic. And I think all of those things play into the fact that, it's just, you know, it's really a a special place to work.
One thing I did want to touch on was, like, without the NCAA tournament, there's a lot of what ifs. Like, the Dayton Flyers were off and running. Yeah, Obi Toppin, we declared for the NBA draft. He was a monster this year. We've averaged the league 20 points of us. I was able to watch him when he played St. Joe's. He is a beast on the floor. And Dayton was a team to watch if it would have been a tournament this year.
Yeah, you know, and certainly there are a lot of casualties by not having the NCAA tournament. And, you know, my heart goes out to, you know, seniors that have been at schools for 4 years or seniors that have been at schools for 4 years and this is the first time they've made the tournament, you know, like players like Obi Toppin who didn't get a chance to really showcase on a national stage, you know, just how great a player that he is. And, all of those things get lost. And you have to remember, too, we're coming off a year where there was no preemptive favorite going into the tournament. Anyone could have won the NCAA tournament. And, you know, even at the Big East, we were very hopeful. We thought we had, you know, a couple, three teams that could make potentially a deep run into the tournament during a tournament that, quite frankly, just had no favorite. So it was unfortunate. It's unprecedented, and you feel bad, for a lot of players and a lot of teams that didn't get the opportunity.
Yeah, definitely, because for some kids that's not going to make the NBA, March Madness would have been their championship or their, as a tournament highlight, one shining moment. A lot of players play for that moment, and a lot of players are not going to get to experience that.
Yeah, no, there's no question, but you know, especially for, as I mentioned, for those seniors, that's a darn shame. I mean, heck, in the Big East, we had two of the best seniors in the country, in Marcus Howard and Miles Powell. And, they missed their national, showcase. And, I was looking forward to them showing out, for the rest of the country.
Yeah, and that's where our players make the stock rise in the NCAA tournament. The odds are on dog. We've seen it numerous times over the years.
Yeah, no question.
Did you have an NCAA champion, and were you glancing at the field? Did you have a champion for the NBA? Or might win it all?
You're asking for a prediction?
Yeah, your prediction.
Well, I think the two best teams out there are Milwaukee and the Lakers. Whether or not in this environment, as we discuss, they make it through Orlando, to the NBA Finals, we'll see. I think there are some teams out there now that could be huge flies in the ointment, namely the Clippers, is one team that comes to mind. Boston, you don't know how, they would react in the playoffs. We just have to wait and see.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'll wait and see about this one because this is going to be crazy. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Stu, thank you so much for joining me on NBA Panel. I'll do this again when you're available again. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, John, thank you for having me and really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Be safe. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yes, that was Stu Jackson, Big East Conference Associate Commissioner. Thanks for joining me. Catch you next time.